Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans yesterday, Charles. The Texans continue to load up. Bills get a second-round pick in 2025. Texans get back Diggs, a sixth-rounder in 2024, and a fifth-rounder in 2025. What do you make of that deal for the Texans, how it affects Houston? And then on the other side of things, Charles, how things came to an end between the Diggs and the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I think this is something that you go back to the combine, especially after the trade went down, just sort of texting guys across the league, gauging what their thoughts were on not only the compensation, but just the fact that the Bills pulled the trigger on it. It's clear that he must have been very, very available at the combine, because a multitude of guys across the league were like, look, if you wanted to have that conversation with the Bills, they were ready to have it. It just was really about where was the trade compensation going to land, and how did you feel about bringing on, you know, a guy who turns 31 next season, and what kind of runway would he still have as an elite high-level wide receiver? So it felt like, clearly to a multitude, I think, of executives, that at some point it was more likely than not that Diggs would be dealt prior to the trade deadline, as long as the team could come up with a comp. But I think the big question was, like, who's going to come up for this? Because it had to be, given Diggs' age, you know, it had to be a team that felt like it's seizing on some element of a Super Bowl window right now. And so for Houston to step to the plate, really interesting. I mean, AFC South, man, it's getting spicy fast. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at four teams in the AFC South that have, you know, young quarterbacks, all on rookie deals, at least right now, and the ability to go out and flex a little bit. You've seen the Titans do it, been very active this offseason in adding pieces. And you know, I think that if you look at it from the Texans standpoint, they're cranking money into that salary cap right now. Well, they know they have the window right now. They feel like CJ Stroud is playing at a high level instantaneously, and they're going to try and push themselves into Super Bowl window immediately. I think you look at the Bills, I think there was an element of burnout that happened here. I think inside the team, they got tired of dealing with not only Diggs' clear unhappiness and you know, sort of an emotional roller coaster with him, that they kept saying, well, it's just because he's such an emotional guy and he wants to win and that's what this is all about. That's fine. But when it continues to reflect negatively on your quarterback, that becomes a problem. And when you've got a brother who's, you know, on the Dallas Cowboys and Trayvon Diggs, who keeps taking shots on social media, and Stephon Diggs does nothing about it, never steps up and kind of pushes back, not a great look. And I think you just, after a while, you wear out your welcome. It's a deep wide receiver draft. And then the Texans showed motivation. They went out and made a deal with the Minnesota Vikings. They acquired the second round pick in 2025, so they wouldn't have to give up draft comp in 2024. And they were able to put that on the table, you know, for the Bills. So I think it was a lot of different factors that you know, created this situation. And we'll see what ultimately happens with Diggs. I think people should realize that he's cuttable instantaneously after the 2024 season for the Texans. So if it goes poorly, or he doesn't live up to basically, you know, $18 million plus base salary he's going to be making, they can cut him for no charge, and it costs them a second round pick. But it's a piece I think they needed. They needed a veteran guy who could step in there, be a leader on that team, which I think, you know, there would be a honeymoon period for him there. And, you know, he'll still get a lot of targets, even with the multitude of skill position pieces that the Texans have around.
Well, that partially answered what my next question was going to be, Charles, is just, what is there a concern level at all? Because I know Diggs was unhappy at Minnesota too, yeah. I think, near the end. Is there a concern in terms of him, you know, with a young quarterback now and things like that? The concern level about his game, I mean, he the last half of last season, you know, his production did decline for whatever reason. And then also, right. Do you look at the Texans right now and say – They're up there with anybody you want to talk about as an AFC contender next year. Is that hyperbole?
Well, I, you know, first to sort of address the concern, you know, his production last year, the Bills changed. I mean, they moved away from him, just frankly. They really did. I think a lot of people are like, well, geez, did he lose his fastball? But if you look at snap percentages, right about mid-November, you saw them start to lean a little bit away from him in the offense in terms of snap percentages, and they started to lean into other players. And they saw an element of survivability after right about mid-November through the rest of the season. Josh Allen played better. And, you know, so I think that from the Bills' standpoint, it wasn't necessarily that he was just declining. I think it was, okay, look, we are where we are with him. Josh isn't playing great the first half of this season. We've had, obviously, issues at offensive coordinator. We have to retool. We're doing a little bit scheme-wise and you know, get a little bit more of a diverse look at different players. And that included, you know, elements of the running game as well, utilizing backs, a handful of different things. So it did impact his numbers, but I don't know if it's necessarily like Diggs lost his fastball at this point. But, you know, in terms of the Texans, I don't think that's necessarily what they're nervous about. Yeah, it was a, you know, it's like the second chapter in a multi-series novel where he has a falling out or has issues with his quarterbacks, very similar to Kirk Cousins, where there was growing frustration over time. Some of it was with the inability to break through. Some of it was, I don't think it was like any one thing that caused him to continue to have a widening rift with Josh Allen, which I do think, you know, that was legitimate. I think you change scenery, a different head coach in D'Amico Ryans, who I think has done a really good job of connecting with a lot of different types of players with the Texans. I think there's an element of rejuvenation, but that's also why I mentioned he's cuttable after a year. I think it's a gamble that the Texans feel like they can take. I think they feel like there will be a honeymoon period. I think they feel like they have an opportunity for the offense to be focused through Diggs, which is clearly what he wants. So it, at least in the interim in 2024, it can definitely work. And if it works well, that's a happy Stephon Diggs. We've seen that in the past when they're doing well and things are thriving. And he can be that sort of vocal leader on the team, both on the field and off. And a lot of the offense is focused through him. He tends to be a happy camper. So they'll get a run. They'll get a look at it. And, yeah, it's not exactly cheap with a second-round pick. But for what they're trying to maximize now, I understand the gamble from the Texans. I'm sorry, what was the second part of the question?
Yeah, I mean, are they? We were just talking earlier in the show. It's like Chiefs, obviously. You start with them and then
– yeah, right, right.
Ravens, them, Bills.
You know
– receiverless Bills?
They've definitely added a lot, right, this offseason. I mean, it's not just offensively. They had pieces defensively. You have Will Anderson. You think, hey, there's going to be another step forward. So you have young guys that you assume are going to take a stride. I think from a skill position standpoint, it's funny because we were on the podcast yesterday and I was like, hey, like the Titans got to be feeling pretty good because you're like, hey, we added to our secondary. That's probably going to be a good scenario for us considering when we go to line up, you know, two games a year in the regular season against the Texans, we now have Stephon Diggs, who I still think can be at least right now. Again, he's going to be 31 in November and we're getting there with him, but I still think he's got a couple years with high level tread on him. He's going to be a handful as a number one wide receiver. I think it makes Nico Collins better because it shifts him into that number two spot. It's hard to just throw your number one corner on him now. I think Tank Dell, we'll see how he responds to the broken leg. I know he's out there running. They feel really good about him. Like he's going to be full speed when camp starts. But now you're talking about three wide receivers who can all play the X position. Dell can move into the slot, which is going to be a horrible handful if he, you know, comes back the way that he played last year from a slot perspective. Dalton Schultz, who they committed money to, is, you know, at least a mid-level to upper mid-level tight end in the league. I think he showed last year when he was healthy. And then Joe Mixon, adding that element to the run game. They're a handful. I mean, from an offensive standpoint, good Lord. And a part of the reason why the Texans, you take this shot now too, is they don't know how much longer they're going to have Bobby Slowick. So from an offensive coordinator standpoint, push it now. If you're going to have him just in 2024, maximize it now while you still have him, because who knows if he goes out the door. It's like with the Bills and Brian Daboll, who knows how long you can kind of keep this momentum together if the OC changes hands. And, you know, in terms of like the Super Bowl sort of, are they in a Super Bowl window now? I think it helps that they, as I said, they added defensive pieces and they have a defensive, you know, head coach. They were remarkably good, I think, on defense in comparison to where they were a year before with Ryan. So I get it. Like, I understand. And you look at the AFC overall, everybody has some kind of loose threads, right, that you can tug on. The Chiefs, to lose Snead, not great. You know, Rashee Rice, what's going on with that in Dallas, right, with him and this the drag racing incident. So there's problems with that, you know, that ceiling, that team that you perceive as being the ceiling. They're a little bit vulnerable right now, and I think you could probably say that about all the AFC elites. So I think the opportunity is there right now for the Texans to make hay pretty quickly. But also, like I said, the AFC South is interesting to me because, you know, I think Tennessee, you know, let's see how these moves. Tennessee has been very active this offseason. Very curious to see what they look like under the new regime. You know, Anthony Richardson comes back healthy. You know, they can be a handful in Indianapolis. You know, Jacksonville, I think last year we're going to see it was a blip because I think Trevor Lawrence was way more banged up last season over the expanse of the year than we ultimately thought. But geez, AFC South is exciting to me now. There's just young quarterbacks all over the place. You have some regime change. You have a lot of different things that are happening with these franchises. And we're going to assume that Houston, right, after the 10-7 season and the additions, well, that's the pack leader in the AFC South. We'll see. We'll see, because I want to see what, you know, Tennessee looks like with coaching and scheme changes and a quarterback who's got an entire offseason to, you know, work in the passing program and, you know, Indy to have Richardson back healthy. It's not just being competitive in the AFC in terms of a Super Bowl, but the AFC South is not exactly a cakewalk.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, continuing our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. So, Charles, now that Buffalo is without Diggs, two-part question here. Number one, do you think they could be interested in T. Higgins from Cincinnati? And number two, regardless of if it's the Bills or another team, how much do you think the draft and the depth at wide receiver is impacting T. Higgins, his pursuit, and how many teams are going to actually, you know, pay the price to go get him?
Well, I would say they're not done in terms of the Bills and what's available here. You have some, you know, less than enticing free agent options that are still out there. You're not going to get anyone near Stephon Diggs' impact, but you could sit there and go, okay, well, maybe in the aggregate, we can recreate this with a couple of signings. Higgins makes more sense in terms of, excuse me, if you're trying to replace, you know, what Diggs brought to the table as like a true X1, that kind of guy. You know, he fits, but you also got to pay him. And, you know, you're taking, remember, a $30 million plus cap hit, implied cap hit anyway, when it comes to getting rid of Diggs. So that factors in. There's draft compensation that factors in. And I do think, as you said, the depth of the wide receiver class hurts T. Higgins at this stage because, you know, you've got, when I talked, you're going to have six, seven wide receivers potentially go in the first round, but there's an element too where, like a Keon Coleman out of Florida State, where a lot of people thought, hey, he's maybe a top 15 pick next year, very easily could be middle of the second round, late second round next year. There's a handful of guys really like that that I think may trickle down the board more than people think. So there's definitely talent to be had beyond just the first round. So I think the Bills could sit pat late in the first and be looking at handful of wide receivers getting to them. Brandon Bean's traded up, what, 4 out of the last 6 years? So he could package picks and try to move a little bit up in the first round and potentially target someone. The fact that the trade goes down now at a standpoint, you know, from a standpoint of the Bills having seen the wide receiver class from the NFL draft is important. They know the depth that's there. They know the quality of the players that are going to be on the board in the first round. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question they'll kick tires on a potential acquisition elsewhere. Who else is potentially on the market beyond just a T. Higgins? A lot of time to work between now and the beginning of the NFL draft. I'd expect there will be interest there. I don't know, though, that that's the hard and fast plan at this point, especially given what the depth of the wide receiver spot is. Like, I'll give you an example. Xavier Worthy, right? Some teams look at him and they go, well, given the frame, yeah, he did run a 4.21 40, but a little bit of a body catcher prior to his last season at Texas. That worries us a little bit. You know, the frame worries us in terms of the size. Maybe he's not a first-round pick, so maybe that'll be a guy that's sitting there, clear vertical threat for them. A.D. Mitchell, another guy at Texas that I think straddles somewhere, maybe the late, you know, last 12 picks of the first round, first 12 picks of the second round. Really talented, long receiver, major speed, kind of a glider in his routes when you talk to guys that are breaking down tape. Ton of talent, but again, another player that could be available in the latter reaches. Brian Thomas Jr., the LSU wide receiver, who I was talking to a scout last week about him and just what he had put on tape, and he's like, man, the route tree they had him running, you know, he's not a yak guy, but vertical, vertical, vertical. If you got a quarterback with a big arm, this is a player that absolutely you can go and get where you're just going to throw bombs to him nonstop. There's a lot of different skill sets, I think, that are available to teams in this draft as well. So does put a competitor out there, though, for T. Higgins potentially. I still think, though, that because of the cost there, the draft compensation, the contract that's got to be doled out, and the depth of the wide receiver class, it's going to be tough sledding, I think, for T, unless someone is sitting there going, you know, we're absolutely going to miss out on the wide receiver we have, and we're not on a major quarterback contract right now, so that's a luxury we can afford. This really does, by the way, guys, put into focus, I think, when you look around the league, how important it is for teams when they're on rookie quarterback contracts, whether or not, you know, okay, where can we go for the first couple of years? You know, we feel like we've got Will Levis through that fifth-year option. So if you're the Titans, you're saying we've got 4 more years of control. That's going to be fairly cost-effective. We can pour resources in the interim into these other parts of the team, and then eventually we'll have to rob Peter to pay Paul when hopefully, and you would want it, hopefully we get to that big quarterback extension down the road, which means he worked out as a cornerstone franchise-type quarterback. But it shapes – like, this is why the Bears, part of why they moved on from Justin Fields, because they sat there and said, hey, we got to make a decision. We don't want to pay Justin Fields, even if it's $35, $40 million a season and sign to that kind of contract extension. We have way more cap flexibility with a Caleb Williams, just selecting him number one overall and the 5 years of what we can add around him in that window. It's quarterback deals now are a very, very, very big deal just because everybody's going to be making a ton of money. And if you got a really, truly special one, you're talking $50 million plus. Eventually, we're going to get to $60 million plus in average annual value. And that's part of why the Cowboys right now are having the problems they're having, because they just simply have too many people to pay that are going to be at the top of the weight scale.
So fans in Jackson County, Missouri, vote down a sales tax. Would have helped renovate Arrowhead Stadium. What does it mean? Hey, speaking of Dallas, you got the Chiefs moving to Dallas now? What's going to happen here, Charles?
Yeah, the mayor? Is the mayor that made those comments?
He's sick of Jerry. He wants Clark.
Yeah. Seriously. It's interesting that – so clearly the Chiefs knew this was coming. So basically Jackson County, they had this big initiative. It was going to add – three tenths of a cent for like 40 years in sales tax, right? And it was going to help fund the Royals having a downtown stadium, which I think was a huge problem with the initiative. I think a lot of voters did not like sort of the proposed areas of that stadium for the Royals. And then it was going to help fund like $500 million of $800 million in renovations for Arrowhead, which the Chiefs, I mean, they lease it. It's not – Arrowhead's not owned by the Hunt family. It's leased. And the Hunt family is going to put up, I think, $300 million in private funding. you know, to go toward that. But yeah, I mean, it overwhelmingly failed. All the, you know, the franchise leaders down there knew like this was coming. It was a problem. They saw the negativity surrounding it. And I think it's interesting because, you know, you'd think, wow, for everything, particularly having the Chiefs involved in this, and everything that, that obviously the team has brought in terms of success, maybe you'd have an easier time getting something like this passed. I don't know, man. It's, I think you are seeing fan bases that are looking at, and again, I want to be careful here because I do think a lot of it, a lot of the failure had to do with the Royals and where the stadium was going to go and a lack of transparency in the process, really with both teams, but especially where that stadium was going to go downtown for the Royals. But I do think there's an element of fans sitting there, particularly in the NFL, looking at the value of teams, looking at, you know, $5 billion, $6 billion in terms of franchise value, and then sitting there and going, why are we funding, you know, $500 million in renovations for a stadium when clearly, you know, these owners, in terms of the equity that they have, that they can borrow against, by the way, they can spend that money themselves. Or, hey, guys, go out and get it from the private sector. Instead of taking money from, you know, every single person in this county, every time they buy something in the form of a sales tax hike for four decades, by the way, 4 decades sales tax hike. Awesome. You know, go get it from someone else, you know, go get it from some of your rich buddies that are in Missouri who can kick in and help you, you know, fund these renovations. It's interesting, just a very, very interesting development. And I would not be surprised, especially given where franchise values are going for NFL teams, to see more pushback in localities everywhere. I think people are less and less likely to want to fund, you know, stadium projects, new stadiums, renovations, especially renovations.
Well, especially when the prices and everything else is going up too. Yeah. I mean, how many different ways can you hit people up? I guess it's not NIL at least.
Well, yeah, there's that. But yeah, parking concessions, it's definitely not getting any cheaper, you know, to go to NFL games. And it, what's interesting to me, too, is almost instantaneously when you see a franchise turn itself in the right direction, have some success, right away you see a like the Lions did it. As soon as the Lions experienced some success,
pathetic.
Huge hike. Yeah, big hike, and you know,
people suffer for decades, and now let's immediately hit them up.
The second they have some success, yeah, they seize on it and go, this is our chance to, you know, to expand and make some more money here. And I just, again, I think as these franchise values go where they go, I think fans are going to be far more suspicious and reticent to pay, you know, money out of their pockets to fund a lot of this stuff. And I think the one, look, some scenarios that you will have where it's different is, you know, realistically, could a team leave? So we're not there, obviously, with the Chiefs, right? But could we get there? Maybe, you know, for a year from now, for 2 years from now, and the Chiefs are sitting there going, we've got no buy-in from the community. Like, is anyone else interested? It could get pretty nasty pretty quickly. But you know, we're not there yet, but I think that's when you will see fan bases continue to shell out money, is either to draw a team in, or if they're really feeling like, hey, we're in danger of losing this, and this is a centerpiece of our community and our lifestyle here. We don't want to lose, a team over, you know, $500 million. I don't think that's really realistically going to happen with the Chiefs, but, it could happen elsewhere. I mean, we saw it happen in St. Louis, obviously.
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good morning.
Happy birthday week, Charles.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But real quick, too, I'll give you.
You and I are about 100 combined now. It's pretty close.
Oh, my God. It's so bad. It's awful. I walked like 3-4 miles the other day, and I was like, that night I was tired. I'm like, why am I so tired? Because I just went and walked. I did. But here's the excitement of 47, by the way. I turned 47. Good God. We go to, this is a real thing. We went to a coffee house, which allows you, they allow you to pay $18 an hour each to hang out with cats that you can adopt and drink coffee. That's what I did on my 40th.
Happy birthday to you.
Wild times,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
Did you adopt one?
Amazing stuff.
Did you adopt one?
No, of course. No, that's the luxury. That's what you're paying. You're actually paying $18 to not have to leave with a cat.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So wow. I got my wild birthday out of the way. So good Lord.
My goodness.
Not exactly. It harkens back to the days when I woke up in your bathtub at 5 a.m. with you pounding on the door because you wanted to brush your teeth after I passed out during a party.
Yeah, I remember that one.
You've come a long way.
Yep, that's an all-timer.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Thank you, Charles.
All right, guys.
See ya.
Yeah, have a good day.
We'll react to what Charles had to say there next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.